don't understand, Obi-Wan. You'll never understand. You've never been a slave. You have no idea what it's like to be completely helpless. To know your life could end at any moment on someone else's whim. That's true, he admitted. But no, there is no but, Anakin said flatly. You're wrong, okay? You're wrong. So just sit there and be wrong. Or get the other lamp set up, or start looking for a comm hub so I can hopefully punch a signal through to the temple. Do something, Obi-Wan, do anything. Anything except try to tell me that I'm wrong, because I'm not. Obi-Wan looked at Anakin, astonished. Ignoring him, Anakin turned away and began to rummage through an overstocked cupboard. So he did as he was told, and started setting up the second lamp. Chapter 17. It took some doing, but Anakin finally found a comm hub that he could rejig, perhaps. He also found a reader that would accept the modern data crystals Dr. Fernan had given them. It was slow and temperamental, but it was better than nothing. So Obi-Wan hunkered down beneath the table, shielded the desk lamp's glow with his body as much as he could, and started reading the background research notes on Lock Derd's precious, pernicious bioweapon. Do we really need to know that stuff? Said Anakin, looking askance. Obi-Wan shrugged. Possibly not, but you never know when an obscure piece of information could come in handy. Huh. Does that mean you want me to read it? No, Obi-Wan said, glancing up. I want you to be quiet and fix that comm hub. Muttering under his breath, Anakin took the old comm equipment apart, using a toolkit he'd found in a drawer. Time passed, painfully slow. Once, they stopped what they were doing, frozen, as a battle droid patrol clanked past the shop front. But the machines didn't so much as break stride, so they started breathing again and got back to work. As best as they could guess, they had 6 more hours of darkness before Lanteeb's sun rose, and they needed every minute. Coming back from the shop's tiny refresher, Obi-Wan found Anakin trying to raise Dr. Fernan on their sole remaining comlink. Any response? He asked, folding himself back under the low desk. Anakin shook his head and put the comlink aside. Tipping the gutted comm hub toward his own lamp, he examined its stripped-down basal connections. No. Oh, that wasn't encouraging, but worrying about it wouldn't help. I'm sure she's all right, Anakin. She's a strong, intelligent woman, and I don't sense any trouble, do you? No, said Anakin, frowning. No trouble, only that she's afraid. She'd be a fool if she weren't. Well, I'm sure she just fell asleep. It's very late. Yeah, probably. I'll try again in an hour or so. The little Obi-Wan could see of Anakin's face was drawn with weariness. Could be she's got the right idea. Why don't you take a short nap? I'll keep watch. No, I'm fine, said Anakin, picking through the toolkit. Why don't you? No, I'm fine too. He rubbed his tired, burning eyes and tried to ignore the leaden exhaustion in his muscles. Besides, I've barely scratched the surface of this research. There are hours of reading on these data crystals. Anakin selected a small gauge wire stripper, then glanced over. He wasn't angry, not anymore, but he was definitely withdrawn. Come across anything useful yet? Unfortunately, it's not easy to tell, he said frustrated. Chemistry was never my strong suit, I'm afraid. Then skip it, said Anakin, and you can transmit all the science stuff through to the temple. Let them figure it out. Good idea. And when will I be able to do that, do you think? Anakin snorted. When I've got this blasted thing working, and provided I can bounce the signal around the holonet grid enough times so that if the Seps do manage to pick up our transmission, they won't be able to figure out where it originated. You can do that? He said, impressed. He wasn't bad with electronics himself, but Anakin was, he hated to say it, extraordinary. In theory, said Anakin, shrugging, whether I can do it in practice is yet to be seen. It's complicated. Obi-Wan got the unspoken message. In other words, shut up and let me work. Silence fell again. He gave up on the science behind the bioweapon and instead turned his fading attention to Dr. Fernand's comprehensive data on Damatite and its uses. But after a while, his vision kept blurring, the words running together like melted wax. He found himself rereading the same paragraph and failing to understand any words more challenging than and or but. Dropping the data reader into his lap, he let his weary mind wander, only to have it stumble right into the conundrum of Dird's kidnapped scientist. Attempting her rescue, not to mention the rescue of her threatened family and friends scattered across 5 planets, could well jeopardize the mission. One false step, one small mistake, and Dird might be alerted to his danger. While he imagined himself safe here on distant, obscure Lantib, there was every chance of not only disrupting the creation of his bioweapon, but also taking him back into Republic custody. Now, that would be my definition of mission success. On the other hand, not trying to save Dird's 13 hostages, abandoning them to his brutal revenge, while that might be the pragmatic thing to do, could I live with myself if I did it? Could I forgive myself their slaughter? Probably not. And neither would Anakin forgive him. He frowned at his former student, so diligent in his task. Anakin, feeling the scrutiny, looked up. What? Nothing, he said. Only, you were very good with Dr. Fannin tonight. Anakin's jaw tightened. Obi-Wan. No, I mean it, he said quickly. I'm not trying to... My intention isn't to... It's a compliment, Anakin. What you said to her about forgiveness, it was very powerful. That's all I meant. Oh, said Anakin, wary. He exchanged the wire stripper for a micro-pulse reader, then tested a circuit and muttered. Okay. So, who forgave you? Anakin stilled. His expression, in profile, was a muddle of surprise and resignation, as though he'd been expecting the question and yet couldn't quite believe it had been asked. Obi-Wan was feeling a little surprised himself. He hadn't meant to ask it. As a rule, he avoided deeply personal conversations, especially about the past, which couldn't be changed, and especially about Anakin's past, so gnarled and tangled and littered with traps. I really am weary. I think I'll quit while I'm ahead. I'm sorry, he murmured. It's none of my business. Forget I asked. I'll... My mother, said Anakin, his voice low. My mother forgave me. Oh, well, and how exactly could he answer that? Because the odds were good that whatever he said, it would be the wrong thing. Shmi's death was a minefield of regrets and failures for both of them. Just before she died, Anakin added. She didn't... She was... He took a deep, shaky breath, then let it out incrementally. She didn't actually say, I forgive you, Anakin, you know, for not saving her, for not going back to Tatooine and freeing her. But I could see the words in her eyes. I could feel them. She forgave me. What that meant to Anakin, Obi-Wan could only imagine. But his mother's forgiveness was only half the equation. He rested his head against the solid side of the desk. And when are you going to forgive yourself? Anakin returned his attention to the comm hub. Who says I haven't? Anakin, please, he said. If you'd rather not talk about this, just say so. But don't treat me like an idiot. Fine, said Anakin, and pulled out another comm relay circuit. I don't want to talk about this. Except... That wasn't good enough. This thorny, unhealed issue needed some kind of resolution. Unless Anakin could find a way to reconcile himself with Shmi's murder, he would never find peace. Her cruel death would continue to haunt him, to feed his fear of failing those he cared for the most. Fear was Anakin's greatest weakness. It always had been. Such a dichotomy. He's the most fearless man I've ever fought with. Yet a part of him remains that small, frightened boy who left Tatooine 11 years ago. The boy he knew, to his shame, he'd sometimes failed to reach. You shouldn't blame yourself, you know, he said. If you want to blame someone, Anakin, blame me. We both know I encouraged you to leave Tatooine behind. What happened wasn't your fault. You really must stop punishing yourself for it. I'm sure your mother wouldn't want that. She wouldn't want... Anakin dropped circuit and mini pliers and stared. Such an intimidating, adult stare. The atmosphere crackled with a sudden, dangerous tension. Yeah, okay. And which part of I don't want to talk about this just slipped right on by you there? All right, this was a mistake. He's not a child anymore, Obi-Wan. You keep forgetting that. Sorry, I'm tired. I don't know what I'm saying. I think I will take a nap after all. Wake me in half an hour, would you, if I don't wake of my own accord? For a moment, he thought Anakin was going to change his mind, was going to break his self-imposed silence and tell him everything that had transpired on Tatooine when Shmi died. Because there was more. He had always known there was more than the bald fact of Shmi being kidnapped and killed by Tusken Raiders. He just didn't know what. And he'd never let himself think about it. He had only let himself hope that one day Anakin would find his way to telling him the whole story. Please, let one day be this day. I have a feeling it's important. Anakin nodded. Yeah, you get some rest, Obi-Wan. You look beat. So, not this day after all. Disappointed, fleetingly aware that somehow he'd managed to mishandle a rare, important moment, Obi-Wan closed his eyes and was instantly asleep. It took him the best part of another 3 hours, but eventually he did it. He upgraded the clapped-out, antiquated SigTech Industries comm hub until it was good enough just for them to make contact with the Jedi Temple and Yoda. Triumph washed away the acid weariness. I'm good. I am. I don't care if I'm not supposed to say it. I'm good. Sharply, achingly, he found himself wanting Padme, needing her so viciously that her lack was a physical pain. He almost never got to celebrate his victories with his wife. Mostly, he had to imagine her joy on his behalf and console himself with memories. But he'd rummaged through them too often. They were starting to wear thin. We need to make new ones. I need to be with her again. I need to hold her, to feel her. I need to know I'm not alone. He was tired. He was so blasted tired, but unlike Obi-Wan, he didn't dare fall asleep. Bantin Afernan had stirred up the past. If he fell asleep, he might dream of Tatooine, and in dreaming, he might betray himself. And Obi-Wan could never know. Padme. Padme, I need you. You're the only one who understands. You're the only one who can make the dream stop. His desire for her was like a dragon sleeping. The slightest breath could awaken it, fan the flames until they threatened to consume him. He had to fight it. Innocent lives were depending on him. Obi-Wan was depending on him. Letting him down was unthinkable. Breathing harshly, fist pressed to his lips, Anakin beat the roaring dragon into submission. Curled on his side beneath the electronic shop's battered desk, Obi-Wan didn't stir. The stipulated half-hour deadline long behind him, he slept like the dead. He's going to be furious when he does wake and realizes I disobeyed him. Ah, well, it isn't the first time, and it won't be the last. With his primary task completed, he retrieved the comlink, crawled out from under the counter, retreated to the rear of the shop, and tried contacting Bantina again. This time she answered.
Anakin, are you all right? Where are you?
We're fine, he said, keeping his voice low, but I'd better not say.
Oh, of course.
Are you all right? Has there been any trouble since we left?
No, everything's quiet. Anakin...
What? He prompted when she didn't finish.
I don't understand. Why do you care so much?
There wasn't time to tell her. He wouldn't tell her if there was. I just do. Her sigh crackled over the link.
Whoever you lost, you must have loved them very much.
His fingers tightened on the comlink. Bantina, I have to go. Remember, keep this link open. When things happen, they'll happen fast.
I'll remember. You be careful.
Not even the conversation with Bantina had woken Obi-Wan. Concerned, Anakin held one hand just above his mentor's sleeping face and sought for a sense of him within the Force. Sought to feel if anything was seriously wrong. But no, Obi-Wan was just tired. But is he too tired? Is he more tired than he should be? I know it's exhausting fighting a war, but there's still Zagula. When is he going to tell me about what happened there with him and Bale? He should tell me about that. Zagula's something I need to know. And as soon as they'd put this mission behind them, he'd corner his former master and get the truth out of him, one way or another. It was still dark, the city still under curfew. In his estimation, there was too much risk attached in trying to contact Yoda yet. Not enough ambient comm chatter and signal traffic for their illicit transmission to hide in. So he filched the data reader from sleeping Obi-Wan and plowed through reams and reams of fascinating facts about Damatite. Lanteeb's pale dawn came at last, and as the sense of the world around them changed, Obi-Wan woke, knew instantly he'd been asleep much longer than half an hour.
Anakin!
Don't start with me, Obi-Wan, he said, not looking up from the reader. We both know you needed it. I will be the arbiter of what I need, not you. Now he did look up. Not this time, Obi-Wan. What's the problem? It's not like we had somewhere else to be, and it's not like both of us were working on the comm hub. The hub? Obi-Wan uncurled himself and cautiously sat up as far as he could, propped himself on one elbow. Is it fixed? Of course it's fixed. Then why didn't you wake me? We have to contact Yoda. We have to piggyback our signal on one of the SEP signals to hide it, he said, putting the data reader aside. It's the only way I can guarantee, almost, that we won't be detected. What about coding our transmissions? Said Obi-Wan, still looking for fault. I tell you, Anakin, I don't like the idea of sending data this sensitive without some kind of safeguard. Well, I've wired in the scrambler chip I brought with me, but... Anakin shrugged. The whole thing's a bit wobbly, Obi-Wan. It's not like we're talking compatible technology here, you know. Obi-Wan tugged at his beard. But you are sure we can at least cover our tracks? As sure as I can be, he said. Once I've piggybacked onto a SEP signal and we hit the first holo relay, I can bounce our signal in a different direction and in theory nobody here will be any the wiser. But to do that, I have to wait for there to be a SEP signal. There was no comm traffic through the night? Not the kind we need. Anakin raised an eyebrow. A couple of local comms only. Seems the Separatists, unlike some people I know, believe in sleep. Huh, said Obi-Wan, and scrubbed a hand across his face. What about you? Did you get any rest? I'm fine. He tapped the data reader. No chance of falling asleep with this riveting tale to read. Although, did you get up to the bit about how Lanteeb's other two continents are uninhabitable due to Damatite contamination? No, I didn't, said Obi-Wan, his interest piqued. I wonder if that's what gave Dird the idea for his filthy bioweapon. Probably, he grinned. When we catch him, we can ask him. Oh, and I talked to Bantina. She's all right, there's no trouble. Well, not unless you consider her talking to me at blaster point trouble. Obi-Wan straightened so fast he whacked his head on the underside of the desk. What? Sorry, he said hastily. Bad joke, sorry. Very bad joke, Obi-Wan muttered. Do you know there are times when you and Bail Organa are uncannily alike? Anakin kept a straight face, just. Thank you. That wasn't a compliment, growled Obi-Wan, then rolled out from under the desk and unfolded to his feet. How soon before we can risk contacting the temple? Anakin checked the comm hub signal monitor. Not yet. Relax, Obi-Wan. As soon as the right kind of signal comes along, I'll be all over it. This is what I do, remember? I fiddle with things and make them better. What you do, retorted Obi-Wan, is drive me to distraction. Well, you know, he said this time, letting his amusement show, Everyone needs a hobby. I thought you already had a hobby. What, I can't have more than one? No, said Obi-Wan. Anakin grinned again and got back to his reading. Yoda was teaching when he got word that Obi-Wan and Anakin were seeking to speak with him urgently. Because these students were not younglings, but almost Padawans, he left Ruchikila to lead the blindfolded seeking exercises and hurried to the Temple Comm Center as requested.
Master Yoda, said Master Banyaro, greeting him. This way. The comm signal's very weak. Voice only, no holo-imaging. I don't know how long we'll hold on to it. It's being pinged back and forth over half the Outer Rim and Mid-Rim relay network. And they've asked us to mirror their signal pattern when responding, which isn't helping matters. Also, their security scrambling's patchy. Sounds to me like they're calling home with a tin can and some string.
Yoda guided his float chair beside the temple's energetic communications chief as they hurried through the center's main comm area to the pass-coded high-security section.
In immediate danger of discovery, are they?
Banyaro flipped his long red hair out of his face.
They haven't said as much, but it seems likely.
He was on the brink of breaking into a jog.
We've got them routed through the superconductor. That's the best signal boost and protection we can offer. We'll just have to hope it's enough.
Yoda looked at him sideways.
Worked out, have you, where their location is?
Yes, said Banyaro. I'm assuming you need me to forget that little bit of information.
They'd reached a security-coded door as Banyaro supplied the requisite clearance data. Yoda nodded.
Assume correctly, you do.
Banyaro flashed his rare, crooked smile.
Done. After you, Master Yoda.
The temple's most secure, most powerful comm station was empty. As Banyaro excused himself to monitor the signal strength, Yoda maneuvered his float chair so he could easily access the comm panel.
Obi-Wan, hear me, can you?
Master Yoda, good. Please listen carefully. I don't know how long we can sustain this uplink. We've already transmitted some important data to you. Has it been received yet?
He looked at Banyaro, who checked his monitors, then raised an acknowledging hand.
Received it is, Obi-Wan.
Excellent. Master, we were right. The Seps are manufacturing a bioweapon. The formulas included in the data we sent.
Good work this is, Master Kenobi.
Locke Durd's behind this, Yoda. Did you know he'd...
Know that I did, Master Kenobi. Matter now, it does not. More of this bioweapon, tell me.
Durd's in charge of the project, answering to Dooku, but the scientist who actually invented the stuff says it's possible to create an antidote and a vaccine. We've sent you the names of 4 scientists who could do it.
Helping you, Durd scientist is...
Surprised, he stared at the comm panel. Even for Obi-Wan, this was impressive.
Managed that how, did you?
Dr. Fernan is not a willing participant in this business, Master. Durd's holding her family and friends hostage to ensure her compliance.
Fear and intimidation, a typical Sith tactic. As for Locke Durd...
Cross paths with him again, I knew we would. Obi-Wan, a way to stop production of this weapon, have you found?
Master Yoda, this is Anakin. There's no easy answer to that. Damatite's the key here. It's the weapon's main component. Eliminate the mineral and we'll halt production in its tracks. Problem is, according to Bantina's research, Lanteeb's subject to random Theta storms, and Damatite's the main component in their storm shields. Sure, a Republic assault could take out the mines, but knock down those shields and we'd be condemning the people of Lanteeb to slow, excruciating extinction. At least any of them who survived the bombardment and the toxic fallout that would follow it. And under the circumstances, a planetary evacuation isn't an option.
Sighing, Yoda closed his eyes.
No alternative to Damatite for these shields, is there?
No, Master. Not in the short term.
Good news, this is not.
Master, we could attempt to wrest Lanteeb back from the Separatists,
said Obi-Wan.
But given its value to them, I can promise you they'll not give it up without a fight. I suspect we'd be looking at a prolonged military engagement with a high proportion of civilian casualties.
No easy answer indeed. Another prolonged military engagement with high civilian casualties was the last thing the Republic needed right now. Master, there is a third alternative. Not ideal by any means, but quite possibly our only viable course of action.
Explain.
Master Yoda, we need to rescue the 12 hostages.
And instead of Obi-Wan, that was Anakin sounding anxious.
Once Mantina knows they're safe, she'll help us destroy everything connected with the bioweapon. And then we can get her off Lantib so Dird can't use her again. It'll be tricky, but I think we can do it.
Agree with Anakin, do you, Master Kenobi?
There was a significant pause before Obi-Wan answered him.
As I said, Master, it's a risky plan. The hostages don't realize their endangered status. We would need to mount a number of separate rescue missions, any one of which could fail and alert Dird.
Help us without their rescue, the scientist will not.
They're her family, Master,
said Anakin.
Her friends. She doesn't want to be responsible for their deaths. We can't ask her to be responsible for their deaths.
Yoda sighed.
Possible, is it, Obi-Wan, for you and Anakin to destroy this scientist's facility and research?
Yes, Master,
Obi-Wan said after another long pause.
But that would guarantee her death, as well as the deaths of her family and friends. We'd be responsible for 13 murders.
Ah, yes. Everywhere they turned, it seemed the blood of innocence waited to be spilled.
If young Skywalker's plan, we follow Obi-Wan. Some time on Lantib, you would be forced to remain. Dangerous, that is,
Believe me, Master, I'm well aware of that.
The scientist, Obi-Wan. Trust her, do you?
Yes, we do, said Anakin.
Obi-Wan?
Master, given the circumstances, I don't feel we have another choice,
said Obi-Wan. He sounded worryingly reserved.
Do you?
Closing his eyes, he sought clarity from the Force, sought to find a path through the clouding dark side. But the future eluded him. Any sense of how this situation might play out shifted and taunted, dancing just out of reach. He felt a dangerous shiver of fear. Never, never, not in 900 years, had his abilities been so compromised. The dark side had rendered him virtually deaf, blind, and voiceless.
No, Obi-Wan,
he said at last.
I do not.
And we have one thing in our favor, at least, Obi-Wan added. The successful formula has only just been finalized. The weapon is not yet in full-scale production.
But it would be, and soon. There was no time to discuss this with anyone else on the Council or with Palpatine. He would have to make the decision and bear its consequences alone.
Master Yoda, please let us do this,
said Anakin.
We have to stop Dird without hurting anyone else.
Yes, they did. And while the thought of risking these particular Jedi filled him with dread, this was war. And in war, one could not play favorites, no matter how overwhelming the temptation.
Very well,
he said.
Identify these hostages for me, can you?
We can, Master,
said Obi-Wan.
Stand by for data transmission.
Yoda turned to Banyaro and waited long moments for his acknowledgement. At last, Banyaro nodded.
Receive the data is, Obi-Wan. Into protective custody will I see these people taken. But some time to accomplish this task could require.
We understand that, Master. Don't worry. We'll manage well enough where we are for a few days, I think. Now, I don't dare keep this uplink active for any longer. We'll contact you again as soon as possible. Kenobi out.
For a long time, Yoda sat unmoving in his float chair. Given this new information, secrecy was now even more important, trust in ever-decreasing supply. He had Jedi available to send after the hostages, but what of the antidote and vaccine for the bioweapon? Production of both needed to get underway in case Obi-Wan and Anakin did not succeed.
Master Yoda,
Banyaro said quietly, joining him.
Here's the downloaded information.
He took the two data crystals.
My thanks. Leave me now. Myself, I can see out when finished I am.
Banyaro bowed.
Of course, Master Yoda. If you require me again, you know where I'll be.
As soon as he was alone, Yoda swiftly reviewed the data Obi-Wan and Anakin had sent, found the names of the four scientists who could perhaps perform a miracle, and smiled. Even in these dark times, the Force could find a way. He opened a new comm channel, but instead of reaching the person he wanted, the signal was diverted.
Senator Organa's offices,
said a warm, pleasant voice. Organa's personal assistant, what was her name? Ah, yes, Manala Laudlin. Discreet and efficient, he sensed no duplicity in her.
How may I help you?
Master Yoda, this is... with Senator Organa, I need to speak.
The briefest hesitation.
Yes, sir. Senator Organa is meeting with the Supreme Chancellor. I can reach him if you need me to, Master Yoda.
But if she did that, Palpatine would know that he had business with Alderaan's busy, important representative. He preferred to be discreet. Doubtless he'd bring Palpatine into this mission at some point, but not yet. The Supreme Chancellor was a busy man. Best to keep his desk uncluttered.
Necessary, that is not, he said. Speak with him, will you, when released from his meeting with the Supreme Chancellor he is.
Yes, said Organa's assistant. Shall I tell him you wish to see him?
Thank you. Appreciate that, I would.
Sooner rather than later? And discreetly?
Indeed.
I understand, Master Yoda. I don't imagine he'll be much longer than a couple of hours.
Which would give him just enough time to deal with the less straightforward of Obi-Wan's requests. Tucking the data crystals into his float chair's pocket, he left the communications center and returned to his own domain. Just over a day returned to the temple, kicked out of Kalida Shoals for being underfoot, and already Ahsoka felt like climbing the walls. She wanted to be back out there fighting, but with Sky Guy mysteriously somewhere else, here she was stuck in a stupid dojo with only 4 remote training droids for company. That was until Master Taria Damson came to visit. Ahsoka deactivated her lightsaber and stared at the older Jedi in surprise.
Me? Master Yoda wants to see me?
Us, said Master Damson.
And no, Padawan, I don't know why.
Oh, she said and wrinkled her nose. Does he want us right now? Only I've been practicing for a while and, well, I think I need to clean up.
Master Damson grinned.
I think you do too, Padawan, but when Master Yoda says, at once, come and see me, I'm pretty sure he doesn't mean, after you shower, come and see me.
No, said Ahsoka faintly. No, I don't suppose he does.
Anakin.
Had something happened to Anakin? She hadn't felt anything. There'd been no disturbance in the Force. And when she was by herself in the dojo, practicing, focusing on her lightsaber forms, that was when she usually tapped into it the best.
I'm sure your master and Obi-Wan are fine, Ahsoka, said Master Damson. In many ways, she was a disconcerting woman. I've known Obi-Wan a long time. I can usually tell when he's landed himself in hot water, and I'm not feeling that right now.
You're not?
She said, relieved.
So it isn't me making up stuff because I want to feel it.
You aren't just saying that.
I never just say anything, Padawan, said Master Damson, loftily. Now come on. No smart Jedi keeps Master Yoda waiting.
Master Damson, Padawan, said Yoda as they entered his private chamber. A mission I have for you.
Ahsoka barely managed to keep her mouth from falling open.
A mission?
Well, that was wonderful. While Anakin and Master Kenobi were off doing whatever they were doing, not getting themselves into hot water, a mission was exactly what she needed. She could feel the same kind of excitement in Master Damson, and that was interesting. Since when did Jedi Masters get mission giddy like a Padawan?
Is this an off-world assignment?
Said Master Damson. Yoda was looking at her with unnerving intensity. And Master Damson was looking at him the same way, as though they were having a different, private conversation.
It is, said Yoda after a moment. And very important. To a woman in danger am I sending you and this Padawan, Master Damson. Under enemy surveillance she is. Know that she is in danger, she does not. Alarm her, you must not. Bring her back to the temple, you must, without alerting those who would harm her, hmm? Upon your success do many lives depend.
He held out a data crystal.
Your instructions, these are. Fail this mission, you cannot.
As Master Damson accepted the crystal from Yoda, Ahsoka took one very small step forward.
Master Yoda,
Does this have anything to do with Master Skywalker's mission?
Yoda's eyelids lowered, and he stared at her in silence. She swallowed.
Oh no, I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have said anything. He's going to change his mind now. He's going to send me away. When will I ever learn to keep my mouth shut? Sky Guy keeps telling me, but I don't seem to learn.
An interesting question, Yoda said at last. Why ask it, did you?
Why? Why?
She didn't know why. The thought popped into her head and out of her mouth before she could stop it.
That was why. That was the story of her very short life.
Fear not, said Yoda, gently encouraging. Tell me.
Beside her, Master Damson was considering the data crystal with mild interest, as though she could read its contents without needing a machine.
I don't exactly know, Master Yoda,
Ahsoka replied, almost whispering.
It's a feeling. As soon as you mentioned this woman we need to fetch, I had this feeling. And I could kind of sense Master Skywalker, worried about her.
Misled you, Padawan, your instincts have not, said Yoda, opening his eyes wide again. Tell you more than that, I cannot.
His inscrutable gaze shifted.
Leave soon you must, Master Damson. Return soon. Tell no one of your task,
Master Damson bowed.
We'll not fail you, Master Yoda.
No, Master, we won't,
Ahsoka added, because in this case, failing Yoda would mean she'd failed Anakin, and right now, she couldn't say which would be worse.
Come on, said Master Damson, as they left Yoda's chamber. I've got a secure data reader in my quarters. We'll see what this is about, and then we'll get out of here. Sound like a plan?
She didn't know Taria Damson very well. She'd taken a few classes from her, but beyond that, they hadn't interacted much in the temple. Still, she found herself smiling, liking her a lot. There was energy and humor here, and a refreshing carelessness toward protocol.
Yes, Master, she said happily. That sounds like a very good plan.
Hurrying to keep up, Taria Damson had a long stride, almost as long as Anakin's. She sent a thought winging through the Force to her absent master.
Don't worry, Sky Guy. Whoever this woman is, whatever she means to you, we'll look after her. We won't let you down.
Chapter 18. There were two ways most visitors entered the Jedi Temple, on foot through the main public concourse, or by speeder into the enormous transport complex. Bail Organa entered by a lesser-known third route, one used almost exclusively by the Jedi. It required a special security pass allowing him to fly his speeder into the vigilantly patrolled restricted traffic zone around the temple and dock at one of the private landing platforms attached to its publicly inaccessible sectors. So far, since being gifted with that particular security pass, he'd only made use of it once. It wasn't the kind of privilege he was keen to abuse. Generally speaking, it didn't matter if people knew he'd visited the temple. Usually he had nothing to hide. But this time was different. As his small, nondescript speeder nudged against the platform's docking field, holding fast, he disengaged the privacy shield, pocketed that special security pass, then climbed out. He took one quick look around at Coruscant cityscape, gilded in the late afternoon sun. Lots of distant, streaming traffic, no one on his tail. Good. Once upon a time, he'd have laughed at the thought of taking such precautions. This was Coruscant, the proudly beating heart of the Republic. And this was the Jedi Temple, a galaxy-wide symbol of peace and safety and elegant civilization. He wasn't laughing now. Times had changed, and he'd changed along with them. Every night he fell asleep with the thought they'd see the good old days again. But until then, a weaponized security scanner cleared him into the temple. I'm here to see Master Yoda, he informed the first Jedi he saw crossing the airy 12th-level concourse with its soaring columns and pale polished marble and sweetly scented air of serenity. It was such a contrast to the galaxy's turmoil. She nodded.
Of course, Senator. Please follow me.
He still found it unnerving, so many people knowing him when he didn't know them. Yoda was in his private chamber, comfortable on a meditation pad, engrossed in a data reader. He looked up, gravely smiling.
Senator Organa, good of you it is to come. Very busy you are, I know.
No busier than you, Master, he said, returning the smile. I take it there's news from Lanteeb.
Yes,
said Yoda, putting the data reader aside.
Come in, sit. Refreshment can I offer you?
As he stepped farther into the light-filled chamber, its door closed behind him. Thank you, no. The Supreme Chancellor was kind enough to offer me tea during our meeting.
Hmm,
said Yoda, his gaze intent, his small hands resting loosely on his knees.
And how is Chancellor Palpatine today?
Bail hesitated, then awkwardly arranged himself cross-legged on the chamber's other meditation pad. His knees were going to punish him for this. He's Chancellor Palpatine, witty, urbane, and troubled by the war.
Yet something troubles you about him, I think, hmm?
Bail frowned at his linked fingers. That privileged security pass he carried was only one reminder of how his life had altered since Zagula. This new relationship with Yoda, it was still disconcerting. They weren't friends, not like he and Obi-Wan had become friends, but there was a mutual trust here. An understanding born of shared secrets and shared misgivings, and an absolute determination that the Republic would survive. That no matter how bleak things got or how tempted they were to despair, light would prevail over darkness, and all that they loved would not slip away. He looked up. Rumor has it that Senator Yufwa of Malastir is about to propose a constitutional amendment.
Another one?
Yoda's expressive ears lowered.
The Sixth Amendment, this would be, Senator, since the start of the war.
I know, and believe me, I don't like it. Our Constitution was never meant to be this malleable. Yoda stroked his chin.
This new amendment grant more powers to the Supreme Chancellor's office, would it?
That's right.
Know of this, does Palpatine?
He's the one who told me, he said wryly. He wondered what I thought since the amendment involves security issues, and that's my area of responsibility.
And what think you, Senator, hmm?
I think it'll happen, he said, shrugging. He was aware of a creeping resignation and anger beneath that. Palpatine may be reluctant to shoulder more authority, but the Senate can't seem to push it on him fast enough.
Reluctant, you say?
Yoda pursed his lips.
Believe that, do you, Senator?
Sitting still and silent, Bail felt the dull thudding of his accelerated heart. This was the first time he and Yoda had ever directly discussed the Supreme Chancellor. They wouldn't be discussing him now except that he'd opened the door. Yes, I opened it, but Yoda stepped through it. And what does that mean? That my misgivings aren't wild fancy? The result of too much work and not enough sleep? Does it mean that nasty tickle in the back of my mind is telling me the truth? Do you believe it, Master Yoda? Yoda's eyes gleamed.
Believe I do, Senator, that a free society must guard its freedom zealously, lest wake one morning it does to find all freedom disappeared.
Which both was and wasn't an answer. But he knew enough of Yoda by now to know it was the only answer he'd get. And that was fine. It was all the answer he could deal with at the moment. This was something he'd need to think about very carefully. One wrong word to the wrong person and, well, there'd be trouble, and on a scale he wasn't sure he could cope with. If only I could talk it over with Padme. But Palpatine and his powers are the one subject she and I can't discuss. She's known him so long, her faith in him is absolute. I just wish mine still was. With an effort, he pushed his fresh worry aside and turned his thoughts to an old worry instead. So, what's the news from Lanteeb, Master Yoda? Yoda raised his hand and something floated through the air from a shelf mounted onto the chamber wall. A data crystal. The Jedi Master caught it in his fingers, held it lightly, frowning.
Know any biochemists, do you, Senator?
Biochemists? Yes, he said warily. A couple, as it happens. Why? Yoda's gaze was boring into him.
Trin Netzel?
Trin? Yes, yes, I know Dr. Netzel. He's one of Alderaan's most respected scientists. Master Yoda...
This Trin Netzel, said Yoda, politely ruthless. Trust him with your life, would you?
I've never given it any... He stared at the data crystal, cold rushing through his blood. Are you telling me we're right? We're dealing with a bioweapon? Nodding, Yoda held up the data crystal.
Yes. The formula I have here, found on Lantide by Obi-Wan and young Skywalker. Created it was by a scientist working for General Locke Dird.
Locke Dird. Bale felt his stomach clutch tight. The Nymoidian's escape from Republic custody was a closely guarded secret. And now Obi-Wan and Anakin knew? Oh no, I bet they're... peeved. His mouth was dry. His worst nightmare was coming true. This weapon, it's bad?
Terrible, said Yoda. Attempting to prevent its use are Obi-Wan and Anakin. Fail they might. A defense against it we must have.
Which would be where Trin comes in, Bale said, nodding. We need him to synthesize some kind of antidote?
Correct you are, Senator.
What made you think of him?
Think of him I did not, said Yoda. Suggested he was by the scientist whose formula this is.
Suggested by? Bale felt a tiny flicker of hope. Obi-Wan's turned him against Dird?
Her, said Yoda. Yes.
Bale let out a shaky breath. Then I guess it's a good thing he and Anakin went to Lantibe.
A good thing?
Yoda's ears lowered again.
Remain to be seen, that does, Senator.
Which meant the Order's two best Jedi weren't close to being out of danger yet. Great. Obi-Wan, don't you make me chase after you. I'm a senator, not a blasted soldier. Master Yoda, shifting on the meditation pad, ordering his disordered thoughts, he pulled one knee up to his chest, hands wrapped around his shin. There's no question of Dr. Netzel's brilliance. If anyone can extrapolate an antidote from the bioweapon's formula, he can. But even if he succeeds, do we know how much of the weapon Dird and his scientists have created? If they've already got a huge inventory ready at hand...
They have not, said Yoda. A little time do we have before in danger any planet will be.
But from the look on Yoda's face, not much. There's no question of Trin refusing to help. He's as committed to the Republic as we are. I'll contact him immediately and see he gets whatever resources he needs. If I have to, I'll provide him with the funds he'll need myself.
Necessary that will not be, Senator,
said Yoda, his eyes warm.
The temple's discretionary spending I control, and more easily than you can I mask certain purchases,
Oh, of course. They lived so simply it was easy to forget that over the generations, the Jedi had amassed vast wealth. Which was understandable. The temple and its widespread activities were enormously expensive to maintain, and the Order received no Republic funding. Yoda held out the data crystal.
In person, I suggest you deliver this, Senator. Out of your sight, it should not be.
Agreed, he said, taking it. And of course, I'll let you know as soon as Trin's started work, and keep you regularly updated on his progress.
Senator,
Yoda seemed almost uncomfortable.
This Dr. Netzel. Meet with him I would before the antidote he begins to create.
He looked at the ancient Jedi. Meet with Trin. Why would Yoda need to... Oh, he wants to read him. I forgot the Jedi can do that. You don't trust me to know if he can be trusted?
Trust you I do, Bail,
Yoda said quietly.
But deceived, even the best of us can be.
And of course, he couldn't argue with that. Bitter experience had taught him that lesson comprehensively. I understand, Master Yoda. I'll bring him to see you as soon as possible.
Thank you, Senator.
Bale clambered off the meditation pad and bowed. No, Master. Thank you. I'll be in touch soon. Sealed again inside the speeder, zipping along the priority Senate traffic lane, he requested a secure comm channel and contacted Padme. It's me. Where are you?
On my way home. Why?
Need to talk. Can I swing by? She laughed.
That sounds mysterious. Yes, of course. Do you want to stay for dinner?
Love to, but I can't. I'm heading off-world.
Off-world?
She said, surprised.
Why are you... don't bother. Tell me when you see me.
He spent the rest of the ride to Padme's apartment organizing his transport to Alderaan, tying up various loose ends that he couldn't leave untied, burdening poor Manala with more work than was remotely fair, dictating two memos, and leaving Trin a bland message that he'd be home on a quick visit in the next day or so, and wouldn't it be wonderful if they could catch up? It was funny how things worked out. When Trin had told him, almost a year ago, that he was returning home to take up a teaching post at one of Alderaan's more modest universities, he'd tried to talk his old friend out of it. And if he'd listened to me, I might not be able to take this problem to him now. Looks like Obi-Wan's right. Again. The Force has a habit of creating useful connections. As he came into sight of Padme's apartment block, he calmed Breha. Leave a light burning in the window this evening, my dove. Your shamefully neglectful husband is making a lightning visit home. Her soft, sultry laughter lit a fire in his blood.
I'll do that. How long exactly will the lightning last?
Not long enough, he said, regretful. As long as I can manage.
Ah,
she said.
So, not a pleasure trip, then?
He grinned. I'm pretty sure I can squeeze in a little pleasure here and there. But no, it's business.
I see.
The two small words told him she understood perfectly. She knew him so well, could read every nuance of tone in his voice.
I'll be waiting.
Padme's droid answered her front door.
Oh, Senator Organa, are you expected?
Stop being officious, 3PO, and let him in.
Padme called from somewhere inside the apartment.
And get him a drink. Corellian brandy. Pour one for me, too.
The droid stepped aside.
Senator?
As he made his way to the living room, Padme came out of her bedroom, careless in loose green silk tunic and pants, barefoot, fingers tugging her intricately bound hair free of restraint. She looked tired and frustrated.
Have you heard what Yufua's proposing?
He grimaced. Certainly have. What do you think? Dropping into the nearest chair, she wriggled until she could drape her legs over one armrest and let her head fall against the chair's high, comfortable back.
I think poor Palpatine's going to need a stiff drink and a lie down. They can't keep doing this. He's one man. It's not fair.
Bail wandered to the living room's panoramic window and hid his unease from her by staring at the cityscape. Dusk was falling fast. All the bright lights were winking on. He can always say no.
I don't see how, Padme objected. People are frightened, Bail. They trust him to take care of things. It makes them feel safe knowing Palpatine's in charge. And right now, we need people to feel safe.
She sighed.
But I do wish it didn't involve more burdens for him. He's already got more than enough to contend with.
Oh, he could argue with her so easily. Except he hadn't come here to argue. Hiding every misgiving, he turned. You're right, but then we all do. Padme sat up, dropping her feet to the carpet.
What is it? What's happened? Is it...
Her face paled.
Lanteeb, you've heard something?
As though a switch had been thrown, she'd gone from sympathy to fear. He didn't need to be a Jedi to feel it. But who was she afraid for? He was beginning to wonder. I've just come back from meeting with Master Yoda, he said. He's heard from...
Here we are, Mistress Padme,
said her fussy protocol droid as it entered the living room. Halting beside her, it offered her a little bow, then extended the drink tray.
Thank you, 3PO, she said.
She was so funny. Treated the thing like it was a living, breathing person. Taking the quarter-filled glass the droid offered, she drank most of its contents in a single gulp. The droid did a small double-take, but amazingly forbore comment.
Sir,
it said, tottering over and offering him the other glass. He took it, still looking at Padme. The hit of brandy had washed color into her cheeks, but she didn't look right. Her eyes were wide, her left hand clenched tightly on her thigh. Does she realize what she's betraying, or is it just that she thinks it doesn't matter in front of me? He wasn't sure, and he had no intention of asking.
Go on, she said once the droid had left the room.
Yoda's had word from Anakin and Obi-Wan? He nodded. It's what we suspected.
Great, she muttered, and swallowed the last of her brandy. As if comm viruses and signal jammers and super ion cannons aren't enough, now we've got bioweapons? What's next, a planet killer?
Hey, he said, look on the bright side. At least we've got a working anti-signal jammer prototype.
But no answer to the comm computer virus, she retorted. Sorry, Bail, your eyes are playing tricks on you. The glass isn't half full. It's empty.
She rubbed at her temple.
We're going to need an antidote. Better yet, a vaccine.
He loved the way her mind worked. She'd make a brilliant Supreme Chancellor one day. Not that she'd ever thought of it. But he had, and for the sake of the Republic, he was going to get her thinking about it too, and soon. We surely are, but that's some more good news. Though he was chock full of worries, he had to smile. I don't know how they did it, but our Jedi friends have managed to get the rogue scientist who made the bioweapon to help them. We've got its formula. I'm going home now to speak with a good friend of mine, a biochemist. An answering smile lit Padme's face.
You're right. That is good news.
Stang. And now he had to bring her down. The bad news, he added, reluctant, is that Locke Durd's behind this Lantib business. Her smile vanished.
That Barv. Do you know, Bail, I did wonder.
Yeah, so did I.
You never said.
Neither did you, he pointed out.
Wishful thinking.
And that made two of them. Which was pretty stupid, really, given the times.
So are they coming home?
She said, putting her emptied brandy glass on the armchair's side table.
Anakin and Obi-Wan, did Yoda say if they were on their way back?
No, he said cautiously. I don't think the mission's quite over yet, but they contacted him from Lantib, so I'm assuming they're all right.
I see,
she murmured. He drank the rest of his brandy, felt it hit his empty stomach, hot and potent. Look, I know it's dangerous, what they're doing, but those two eat danger for breakfast, remember? Try not to worry, Padme. They really are the best.
True, she said slowly, but sometimes being the best isn't enough.
He put his glass down on a nearby occasional table and crossed to her, dropped to a crouch, and rested his hand on her arm. Hey, how many times have they spat death in the eye? So many times, I'm thinking right now death's wearing an eye patch.
Ha ha,
she said, but she managed to smile. And then she patted the hand on her arm.
I know, I'm borrowing trouble. I should have more faith. But it's not easy being friends with people who risk their lives on a daily basis. There should be a how-to manual. Or a survival guide.
Yes, there really should. As Alderaan's elected Senate representative, and as its prince, he'd been writing too many letters to bereaved families lately, sending his sincere condolences for the loss of a loved one who'd perished in the battle to save the Republic. It's not only the Jedi and the clones who are dying. My people are dying. And there's no manual for that either.
Hey, said Padme. You okay?
He stood. I'm fine, but I have to go. Briha's expecting me.
Give her my love, said Padme. Tell her I'm still trying to juggle my schedule so we can catch up at the Crystal Bird Festival.
I will. Don't get up. I'll see myself out.
Bail,
she said, as he reached the living room archway.
Master Yoda, did he say when they'd be back?
Slowing, he turned around. Behind the casual inquiry, she was anything but casual. In her eyes, he saw a terrible fear and hope.
Oh, Padme, my dear friend, what have you done?
No, he said. I don't think he knows. She shrugged, pretending nonchalance.
Okay, that's fine. I was just wondering.
He could see in her face that she knew she'd betrayed something. But he made sure she couldn't see that he'd seen it. She deserved a little privacy. He couldn't bring the Jedi home safe, but he could give her that much at least. I should be back well in time for the briefing day after tomorrow, but I'll calm you if there's a problem. She waved a hand.
Don't worry,
I can cover for you.
Focus on this, Bail. This is what's important.
Yes, ma'am, he said, smiling, and reluctantly left her alone.
At first, Ahsoka was surprised when Master Damson said they were taking one of the public shuttle flights to Corellia. Then, she thought about it, and of course Master Damson was right. Given the nature of their mission, they needed to be inconspicuous, which was also why they'd abandoned their regular Jedi clothing. It was actually a bit exciting, even if it did feel odd to be all covered up, long sleeves and trousers and baggy over tunic, down to mid-length so nobody would notice the lightsaber on her belt.
Hey, look at me. I'm a plainclothes undercover Jedi, like Sky Guy.
The dowdy but serviceable shuttle they'd chosen was timed to arrive on planet just as the working day began. That way, they'd be swallowed up in the bustle of rush hour, just two insignificant bodies among many hundreds. Leaving so early from Coruscant meant the transport was barely half full. So she and Master Damson, Taria, had a whole seat row each to themselves, and tucked away right up the back, too, so they could talk in low voices and not have to worry about being overheard. She couldn't remember the last time she'd traveled on public transport. That felt odd, too, after months of gunships and starfighters and the soaring majesty of Republic cruisers like Indomitable or Leveler. This shuttle, it was so ordinary. And it wasn't armed, not even with a single laser cannon. But then why would it be? Who was going to attack a public shuttle on the tedious back-and-forth hop between Coruscant and Corellia? And their fellow passengers? Not a single one of them was scared. They listened to music headsets or watched vids on the HoloNet entertainment feed or read data pads or snored. It was as if in here, the war didn't exist. Leaning closer, Master Damson, no, Taria, she had to remember that, tapped her on the arm. A small smile was lurking and her eyes were amused.
It's called culture shock, Ahsoka. You'll get used to it.
I don't know if I want to, she said, frowning at the oblivious passengers in front of her.
I think I want to smack their heads together and shout, wake up!
But isn't this what you're fighting for? Taria said softly. The chance for them to go about their lives without fear and violence.
You're not we're.
That was curious, but she wasn't going to say anything. She was going to keep her mouth shut for once.
See, Sky Guy? I'm learning. I am.
She looked again at the scattering of drowsy passengers.
I know. I just can't help wondering if they'd get that right now. Right now. That people are fighting and dying for them. Hurting. Bleeding.
Is that what you want? Taria said, curious. To be burdened with gratitude?
Burdened with gratitude?
She'd never looked at it like that.
I guess...
She leaned her head against the seat.
Maybe, she mumbled. Maybe a thank you once in a while would be nice.
And is that why you became a Jedi? To be thanked?
No, she said, shocked and staring. I became a Jedi because I couldn't be anything else.
Taria smiled properly.
Good answer.
Warmed by that, Ahsoka settled herself more comfortably against her seat.
But still...
Taria's sigh sounded sympathetic.
I know, she said. Especially when you see them doing stupid things, yes? Selfish and thoughtless and reckless things that put others in danger. That prove they care about nothing and nobody save for themselves. And when the inevitable happens and they scream for the Jedi to come get them out of trouble...
Taria shrugged.
But what can we do?
We're the galaxy's troubleshooters, Ahsoka.
That's our job.
Well, it was more than a job. Really, it was a sacred calling. But she'd feel stupid putting it that way, so she just nodded.
Yes.
Yes, Taria echoed.
But even so, don't think you're alone in wanting to smack some sense into them sometimes.
Charmed, Ahsoka stifled a giggle. Taria Damson was the most unmaster-like master she'd ever met. She was finding it hard to remember that this female was a Jedi Master, with years of experience and seniority.
Oh, please, what am I, 90? Call me Taria.
And then there was the way she'd excitedly rummaged through the temple's wardrobe warehouse as they'd looked for something suitable to wear for their mission. Taria's squeal of satisfaction as she pulled out a drab, dark brown two-piece traveling suit, as though they were headed on some kind of adventure, not a serious, important mission for Yoda, had left her astonished. No other master she'd ever met was so informal. Not even Sky Guy. Also, Taria had amazing hair. Long and thick and such an amazing color. Even carefully confined in its braid, it seemed to make her tawny eyes glow. I've never, ever been jealous of human hair before. Not until now. Curiosity got the better of her. Where are you from, Taria? I've never... Another smile, mischievous this time. Seen anyone who looks quite like me? Oh no. Was it rude to ask? Probably it was. She was blushing. She could feel it. Me and my big mouth. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to... Relax, Ahsoka, said Taria. I'm not going to bite. I'm from Gaina. Have you heard of it? Sorry, no. I'd be stunned if you had, Taria said cheerfully. It's one of the earliest settled colony worlds. Remotely situated and not at all interested in galactic affairs. I'm the first, the only, Gainan Jedi. What you might call an aberration. Oh. Does that make you... lonely? Being the only one? Taria gave her the strangest look. Do you know, you're only the second person who's ever asked me that. Who was the first? A friend, Taria said after a moment. Her sharp face softened and her gaze lost its focus. Then she blinked and pulled herself back from wherever she'd gone. So, tell me about Anakin. She was going to have whiplash before this mission was over. Master Skywalker? I'm not sure. Well, what did you want to know? Taria leaned close again, confidingly. Basically, how good is he at not getting himself killed? Ahsoka stared. You don't know? Well, I know he's the Chosen One, said Taria, shrugging. The Council didn't manage to keep that secret very long. Other than that... See, the thing is, I've led kind of an odd life for a Jedi. Maybe it's because I'm Gainan, or maybe it's because I'm me. Whatever the reason, I never trod the regular Jedi path, Ahsoka. I've had long-term postings in far-flung places, been on quite a few extended retreats, not so many visits back to the temple. That makes it tricky to keep up with the news. And it explained why their paths had rarely crossed. It sounds exciting. It had its moments, Taria said and chuckled. Now, about Anakin. Anakin, Master Skywalker, is really, really good at not getting himself killed. Taria flipped the end of her braid over her shoulder and fiddled with it. What's his track record on not getting anyone else killed? Something the Jedi Master had said niggled. What was it? I've known Obi-Wan a long time. Risking censure, Ahsoka sank a little way into the Force and extended her senses. Hey, said Taria. No peeking, it's rude. And asking a Padawan to gossip about her master was polite? My master would die before he'd let anything happen to Master Kenobi, she said quietly. You don't have to worry about him. Have to? Taria flipped her braid back. Well, no, of course I don't have to. But every girl needs a hobby, Ahsoka. Yours is worrying about Anakin, remember? Ow. I'm sure they're both fine, Master Damson, she said firmly. Master Yoda...
Attention, passengers. We are on final approach to Corellia for spaceport docking and coronet. Prepare for sublight and have all relevant inbound documentation ready for transit authority inspection.
Right then, Ahsoka, said Taria, suddenly briskly businesslike. A Jedi through and through. Let's run the plan one more time before we hit dirtside. They both remembered it perfectly, of course. Encountering no trouble with Coronet's transit authority, and with minutes to spare, they made their connecting shuttle to the satellite retirement suburb of Visk, where Bantina Fernan's mother made her home. The nav computer on their hired ground car, speeder access was restricted to local law enforcement personnel, guided them without incident to the address the captive scientist had provided. Mata Fernan wasn't there.
Market day in Tiln, her chatty neighbor said helpfully as they stood stranded on her doorstep. Always traipses down to Tiln for her shopping, does Mata?
A disapproving sniff.
My Herald's Tabaroot isn't good enough for her.
I'm sorry to hear that, said Taria, self-contained and polite. Thanks for your help.
They returned to their ground car and looked up Tiln on the navcom.
That's a long way to go for Tabaroot, Ahsoka said, frowning at the readout.
Taria punched the navcom's accept destination button and grinned.
I don't know. I've gone farther for less.
Really, she was the most disconcerting woman. Reaching the small rural township without incident, they soon found themselves bogged down in traffic. It seemed that Tiln markets were a shopping destination in their own right. The crowds were going to make finding their oblivious quarry something of a challenge. Disengaging the auto drive as they reached the end of the queue for access to parking, Taria took over manual control of the ground car, lowered its shield, and swept her narrowed gaze around the other vehicles and the roadside stalls and the meandering pedestrians loaded down with boxes and bags and little carts full of fruit.
Well, Ahsoka, what do you feel?
A cool breeze across her skin, clouded sunshine on her face, the dampest hint of rain coming on, soft like the ocean. A steady susurration of human and non-human emotions. Contentment, avarice, anxiety.
Danger?
Yes, Taria murmured. Someone unsavory is here. Very dark side. They might as well shoot up a flare. Let's tread carefully, shall we?
Stop, start, stop, start. They crawled their erratic way into the public parking station and then into a coded slot on the third level. After paying their credits, they took their ID chip for later, rode down to ground level in the turbo lift, and joined the throng heading into sprawling, popular Tiln markets. Partly covered, partly open air, it was crammed full of sentience from at least 60 different systems, ripe with smells and sounds and 1,000 ways to make and lose money, and, according to the welcome board at the entrance, they now swallowed almost a quarter of the town.
I don't know, Ahsoka muttered, staring in dismay at the shifting sea of shoppers as it spilled and surged among the endless rows and crossrows of stalls and displays.
Maybe we should have stayed in Visk and waited for Mata Fernan to come home. We're never going to find her here.
Patience, said Taria, patting her shoulder. We'll find her. And as unlikely as it sounds, it'll be much easier spiriting her away in this madhouse than it would have been in that neat and tidy retirement estate with its empty streets and nosy neighbors.
Maybe, and of course Taria was an experienced Jedi, but there was no denying it. All these people made her nervous.
Don't think about our quarry, Taria added. Focus on the creature hunting her, Ahsoka. Wherever she is, it won't be far away. And so long as we're careful and don't send up any flares of our own, it'll do most of our work for us.
Admiring, Ahsoka looked up at her.
That's really smart.
Oh, not so really, said Taria offhand. Just a little trick I picked up on my travels.
The creature sent to shadow Mata Fernan left a smear in the force like something dead and dragged across Ferrocrete. Rancid, rotten, a corruption of the light. Gagging, Ahsoka tried to close most of her mind to it. Let only enough of its putrid essence past her defenses so she could track it through the echoing cacophony of every other sentient in this enormous place.
Good girl, said Taria, as they made casual, careful, apparently random progress from stall to stall, closing in on their prey. But I think that's close enough.
She shuddered. Time to start looking for Mata. They'd both memorized the woman's holo image. Medium height, straight brown hair muddled with gray, and cropped short. A singular individual who, it seemed, had never chosen anti-aging or physical enhancement therapies, so she was wrinkled and hook-nosed and bigger-boned than civilian society deemed acceptable. Her face was a map of life lived brashly, on its own bold terms. Before her retirement, she'd lectured in galactic theater across half of the Republic. Ahsoka, struggling to stay hidden from Mata Fernan's shadowy observer, struggling to keep that shadow as close as she could bear, felt Taria Damson stumble beside her. "Stang," the Jedi Master muttered. "No, no, don't mind me." Beneath her light, calf-colored skin, she was pallid. Cutting through the shadow's darkness and the mayhem of the markets, Ahsoka felt pain, a corrosive quiver of fear. "Something's not right. She's..." "Ahsoka," Taria snapped, "on the job." "Sorry," she whispered. "I didn't mean to..." The press of bodies around them eddied like a stream striking rock. She felt a tugging off to the left. Feeling that peculiar rightness in the Force, she turned and looked. "There," she said, pointing. "Taria, there." Chapter 19. Fear and pain crushed to silence, Taria looked.
"Yes, that's the woman we're after. Well spotted, Ahsoka."
A Jedi wasn't supposed to care about praise, and yet she realized with a shock Taria Damson's approval mattered, which was almost as odd as Taria Damson herself.
"Never mind. I'll figure it out later."
Mata Fernan was chatting animatedly to a man selling hand-carved, hand-painted wooden stirring spoons. Ahsoka couldn't believe it when their quarry handed over good credits for two of the spoons. Cooking with wooden utensils? Ugh. That was so unhygienic. She glanced at Taria.
"What now?"
Taria's eyes were half-closed, her lips tight with concentration.
"Now, Ahsoka, we proceed with extreme caution. The sentient watching her, I still don't see him, but I think he's Anzati."
"Oh, well, that wasn't good. Anzati were born predators, even better hunters and trackers than the Togruta. Highly sought after as criminal assassins. He'd be difficult to shake off."
"The good news," Taria added, "is that he hasn't spotted us."
Ahsoka grimaced.
"Yet."
"Now, now," said Taria, nudging her with an elbow. "Would Anakin let you get away with saying that?" "No, he wouldn't. He'd give her a look."
"Sorry."
"Forget it. Come on, let's make a new friend." Threading their circumspect way through this covered section of the markets, toward Mata Fernan, who'd shoved her spoons in her shopping bag and was now inspecting handcrafted lace doilies, they gradually and unobtrusively began to drift apart, angling themselves so they'd end up flanking her. When they were almost close enough to reach out and touch the woman, Taria flicked a sideways warning glance.
"Let me do the talking."
Ahsoka nodded, drifted her hand closer to the hilt of her hidden lightsaber. Strong in the Force, that sense of lurking danger.
"Mata Fernan," said Taria, fingers closing gently on the old woman's arm. "Mata, I have a message for you, from Bantina."
Mata Fernan's eyes were sharp with intelligence. Hearing her daughter's name, she gasped.
"Benti! She's not dead? Oh, I knew it. I knew it. They said I was a crazy old woman to believe she'd survived the Separatists' attack, but..."
She pressed shaking fingers to her lips.
"A mother knows. Where is she? How is she? How do you know her?"
Taria's free hand twitched away the folds of her overcloak, drawing discreet attention to the lightsaber on her belt.
"She's a friend of a friend, and she wants you to come with us."
Mata Fernan's eyes narrowed, and her unpainted lips framed a single, silent word.
"Jedi. She's in trouble?"
Taria nodded.
"As are you. So please, let's go. Slowly, no rushing, no making a fuss. A nice, casual stroll, Mata, toward the nearest exit."
"Why?"
the old woman demanded.
"Am I being watched?"
"Don't worry," said Taria. "We'll protect you."
"We?"
Turning, Mata Fernan looked down and blinked.
"Oh, aren't you a little small to be a Jedi?"
Ahsoka managed a polite smile. That sense of danger was uncomfortably flaring.
"No, please, we really do need to go. You're taking me to Benti?"
Ahsoka looked at Taria.
"I'm Jedi,
We aren't liars.
But sometimes the truth was more dangerous than a lie.
Yes.
Mata Fernan's amazing face tightened.
Then why are we standing around here gossiping?
Smile, Mata, said Taria, slipping her hand into the crook of the old woman's elbow. Relax. We are three good friends who spent a lovely morning at the markets. And now we are going home. Nice and slow. No sudden movements.
Casually, they made their way through the market throng. Like a shadow under bright water, the Anzati slipped after them. It didn't matter that he hadn't spotted them. He had Mata's scent, and he wasn't letting go.
Blast, Taria murmured. This is exactly what I didn't want to do.
This was use the Force to blur their presence in the crowd. Ahsoka felt the ripples around them, felt the sensitive sentience in the marketplace jostle as reality twisted ever so slightly.
Okay, said Taria. Now, while he's distracted.
With the crowd seething and surging, a packed school of bimmy fish startled by a thrown rock, they ducked out of the covered markets and into pattering rain.